With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Page Publishing Book Club. How you doing? I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. We begin with a book that analyzes the actions, well, some of the actions of former President Donald Trump from someone who worked inside the federal government. Paul Schwartz worked in Customs, Homeland Security, and FEMA for 37 years. Then he went on to write a column for his local paper, the Montgomery County Sentinel in Maryland, during the Trump years, covering the White House and Congress. Now he's written a book entitled Trump, The Shell Game, The Conning of America.
So the book is strictly about his inauguration to his first impeachment and the columns that I wrote about him that are related to his administration and how he misused and misunderstood how the federal government works. And I'm talking about things I had firsthand knowledge on, was like drug smuggling. He didn't get it. There are ports of entry along the southern border. I was at every port of entry along the southern border in my capacity with the federal government. I was the director of trade enforcement. So I was very active in getting involved in what was going on the southern border. Drugs aren't smuggled between the ports of entry. They're smuggled through the ports of entry. They go through the ports of entry because there's so much trade going on that the Customs and Border Protection were only able to examine less than 5%, sometimes maybe only 2% of the merchandise coming in. All right. Now, they use means like X-ray machines and technology to really be able to try to catch the illegal drugs, but they don't come between the ports of entry. The migrants come between the ports of entry just to get on the other side. But the drug smuggling goes through the ports of entry, because if you can get it through the ports of entry, then you're free sail to go wherever you can in the rest of the country. So he's talking about to build the Great Wall of China across the southern border to prevent all those drugs from coming in. Well, the drugs are coming in, and there are ways of trying to mitigate that, but building a wall was not the way. That had no effect whatsoever on stemming the tide of illegal drugs into the country. But I mean, like the appropriations process, it's pretty clear in the Constitution that it's Congress has the authority for appropriation. And what he did was in 1976, there was the National Emergency Act. That was designed for those situations during a true national emergency in which there is simply not enough time to go through the formal appropriations process, and not building a wall that would take decades to complete. That wasn't what the law was intended. And what he did is he called the need for a wall a national emergency and moved money that was appropriated for other things in the Department of Defense. He moved that money to throw money at his wall. So that's another one of clearly an abuse of his power, but also a clear misunderstanding of how the system is supposed to work. And that's what I tried to capture in this book.
What I don't understand is that there's Congress, right? They know how these things work. They let them go.
That is an excellent point, because they are complicit. When McConnell was in charge, there really was no checks and balances, because they were complicit in his doing these kinds of things. Even something as blatant as the Supreme Court justices. I mean, to hold Merrick Garland a nomination a full year and say it's too close to the election, and then to squeeze Amy Coney Barrett in 2 weeks before the election or whatever it was. I mean, it's an abuse of power, but you can't get away. Exactly is your point. You can't get away with abusing your power and misusing your power if you don't have that check and balance on the other side, which with the Republicans in charge of the Congress, they didn't have.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is the people who don't understand how and why Trump was not great for America, how are you going to get to them? Otherwise, you're preaching to the choir.
Well, no, that is an excellent point. And, you know, I don't expect the people who are in the Trump cult, who are brainwashed, to read my book. But that 74 million who voted for him, those are not all in the cult. The ones who attacked the Capitol on January 6th, yeah, I don't expect them to read my book. But there are others who need to have a document that really explains why he was so unfit for office. And that's who I'm trying to get. But regardless, there needs to be an historical record of this embarrassing period of time in our nation's history. And the, you know, the steal the vote. I mean, think about it. If people just try to think through what he tells them and try to understand how the heck could you steal an election like that? I was an election judge. I didn't know the person sitting next to me to need to coordinate stealing the votes and having just the Trump votes go to Biden. Well, what about the down ticket? How do you do an election where it's just the top of the ticket gets switched and not the rest of the ticket? How poor could the Democrats be at rigging an election where they're able to get Biden in, but they couldn't get any of these other senators in and face a 50-50 in the Senate? You know, I mean, it makes no sense if people thought it through. But, you know, if this goes back to the concentration camps and Goebbels and propaganda, all right, and how use of propaganda, at what Goebbels said was if you tell a lie often enough, people believe it. And Trump picked up on that, and that's what he does. He tells it over and over and over and over again. And if you want to believe it, because he's telling you what you want to hear, you take it, you buy it. And that's what's happening here. And that's why anything I could do to get people to understand this is what I'm trying to get across in the book.
All right, Paul, thank you for your perspective. A retired Navy commander and lawyer, Terry Lee Norton, uses his experience and historical knowledge to deliver a powerful message about war in his book entitled Violence and Dawn.
Ethan Savage and Shane Savage are the main characters, and their father and daughter. They're basically surviving a broken marriage where the mother doesn't want the daughter. And the dad obviously does. And he's in the Navy, and the daughter is old enough to be aware of that. And so he takes the daughter with him to Hawaii. And it's about 1940. And the book ends on 7 December 1941. So it all takes place. He's on Navy duty there. She's maybe 17, 18. She's in charge of the house. He's on duty. He's a commander. And so he's living the life of a Navy aviator that an admiral somehow has taken over because he's not only a naval aviator, Ethan Savage, he's an attorney. That's sort of me. The mom wants her boyfriend. And so out of that comes a very Navy father-daughter family that goes on what the book talks about. The mother's never a part of it again. Essentially, it talks about the attorney dealing with Navy clients who come to him because of their emotional problems, their legal problems, and how Savage, the attorney aviator, is now being double duty. There's sort of a spy flavor to it where a college professor who meets Savage at a law school in California when he's sent by the admiral to go there has a Japanese student in her class, and there's a paper written, and the paper suggests maybe something's going to happen, and it disturbs the professor. And there's a disappearance of the Japanese student because the professor calls Ethan Savage and says, hey, I've got a doctoral student who's not coming back. Her last known address is out near you. Can you help find her? Savage tries. His daughter's interested in this because it's a student. And you can read that essentially the college student, because she knew people from the Japanese country that maybe knew something about what was going to happen, disappears out of the story. And the suggestion is she's killed. In the meantime, and one of the Navy clients that come to Savage, the guy says, I know they're forming a unit called something in China. Well, it was the Flying Tigers. And he says, if it's true and if you can help me find it, I'd like to get out of here. Savage finds out about the Flying Tigers. helps the guy get assigned there. As you can see, this is like 1939-40, where these were very important units that were going to be fighting even before we were in the war. This is the message of the book, because Pearl Harbor happened, and until then, Americans like the Arna now were divided. War. People throughout the ages lived, died with it. Different cultures, different people as the generations rolled by, talked about its uselessness. Still, the phenomenon that was war persisted. Much like an inexplicable illness, it had no known cure. The planet seemed little more than a practice field, used by people who were here in their efforts to improve. They found themselves replaced in the next 100 years, replenished by others to whom they left the unsolved puzzle that was war. And war, aggression against freedom, had to be fought, Americans knew, opposed by those who were guardians, who did not want war, really. The burden falling sometimes on these few that were warriors, reluctant or otherwise, not the many, brought on often as war was, like its little sister crime, by not the good kind. As modern as cultures became, war remained rivaled in its mystery only by the certainty that was every living thing's mortality. That's my message.
All right, Terry, thank you. Ernie Salotti spent a lifetime in law enforcement and the military, and when he retired, he needed to keep his mind active. So far, he's written 3 novels, but The Crimson Trail is the first one for Page.
All 3 of my novels are heavy into my life experiences. I've had a lot of traveling since I left home when I was 17 and been traveling on the road by myself most of my life. So a lot of it's from my own personal experience. My father was killed before I was born, and I was raised by an alcoholic mother, and that sort of started the book, and that's where the book starts out. The story is about a guy that was born and raised in Yuma, Arizona, in the desert, the dirt. And when his mother died at 17, he left home. And the story is him becoming a man by traveling around Texas and Arizona and New Mexico, where he runs into all kinds of problems and he figures them out, works them out. And he stopped in town to get a drink of water at a well. And while he was there, a man and a woman came in on a horse and a wagon, and they stopped to get water and fill up their kegs. And while they were, 5 guys came up and tried to hustle money out of them, but they didn't have any money. So they wound up beating the guy, trying to get money out of him, and they couldn't get any money out of him because he didn't have any, so they wanted his wife to use her. And Zach, who the main character is, he was standing by, and he could not let this happen. He could not let a woman be abused, so he stepped in and defended them. He run them off. He took a beating for it, but then he was able to fend them off. And he helped the woman and the man get back on their feet and continue on.
Well, you know, you said that Zach was a guy, he really didn't know what he wanted out of life. He was kind of wandering around, and this incident helped him find direction.
Yeah, and he goes from one incident to another incident, and every time he grows, every time he gets more mature, he sees life in a different light. He becomes a man. And, it's sort of a cliffhanger at the end of it. And the second book is really hones him out. He becomes into law enforcement, which I was in, he turns into another complete person altogether in the second book.
So it's about a young man finding his way.
Yeah, finding his way, and he finds it the hard way, because every place he goes into Indian nations, and he gets caught up into the Indian tribes. Caught up into all kinds of problems that he's got to get out of. And he gets out of them, but it's quite a battle for him.
Where did you get the title, The Crimson Trail? What does that mean?
Well, the trail is his whole trip that he's taken is in the desert to start with. Everything he's doing is in New Mexico and Arizona and in California, the desert part of California. But his whole trip is a bloody one. You know, he goes from one fight to another fight to and he's always fighting for good. It's a simple book. It's a simple book of good and evil. And all Westerns are good and evil. So that's what he's doing. He's fighting for good. He cannot see people hurt.
Does the story end with the second book?
Well, I think it'll end with the second book because I wanted to probably do another detective book. I did one, Dead Man's Gambit, but I'm not satisfied with that one. So I want to do another detective. So I think I'll end the story with this second book.
All right, Ernie. Sounds like a plan. Keep it up. And we got to take a quick break, but we're coming right back. This is the Page Publishing Book Club.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple, iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-204-6099 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-204-6099 for your free author submission kit.
We're back on the Page Publishing Book Club. I'm Ellis Stockton Rossini. Harriet Feltman is a travel agent, so COVID hit her business hard. But there was this book she finished years ago that she was always going to pick up later. Well, later is here, and so is her book, Wealth of Deception.
It is a romance murder mystery. What starts out as a very simple love story turns into a real nightmare. It's murder, it's mystery, and it develops into a storyline that when people read it, they go, oh my gosh, how did you ever come up with this? There's a complete charade of people who claim to be who they're not. And as each individual learns who's who, there is a murder that's committed, and that has to be decided on who did it. Can't give too much away, but there's a wonderful lady, her name is Catherine Donahue, and she fell in love with Jonathan, our pal. Except Jonathan is married to his wife, Samantha, our pal. That's so typical. And, you know, it happens. But when it turns out to be deception in every corner of where you look, between the family history of the families involved and the cover-ups, it just gets deeper and deeper. And as I wrote in my little synopsis, that when you put it all together and try to start something and finish it, it just all came full circle. And I am so proud that when people read it, they can't get over that it's so twisted and yet understandably acceptable, especially in today's world. And yet I wrote it 26 years ago. And I fine-tuned it last year during the pandemic. And Page Publishing had an actual ad in the TV. And I said, you know what? I'm going to give him a holler and see how it works. I knew nothing about publishing a book. And with the help from them, and it was wonderful help, that I actually wrote my book. I designed my cover. And it's very exciting because it's all mine. It's like having a baby.
Yeah.
And like I said, when I finished it, I cried like a baby. And when I put the word "the end" on the last page, it was an emotional turmoil within myself. I was pleased just to finish it.
So do you wrap it up all in one book?
I do wrap it up, but many of them, it's definitely open for a sequel. And I told my readers, that I will definitely do a second novel, a sequel, because it leaves a cliffhanger and it leaves plenty of room. We're dealing with very, very strong women. And like I told them, that to write a book about strong women, especially today's society, That's why it amazes me. I wrote it so long ago. And yet it's so apropos. It's so apropos for today. And what's so interesting is that a lot of men read romance novels. Did you know that? I had no idea.
How do you know men are reading it?
Because they call me and tell me. And their husbands. I have dropped off books at my doctor's offices. And I said, could you please give this to your wife to read? And then 2 months later, did you give it to your wife? How do you like it? He says, I haven't finished it. I said, what do you mean you haven't finished it? I always thought of Mrs. Fields' chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
Do you know how she got started? She gave out her cookies in New York City streets. So wherever I go, I have a couple of copies of my book. We go out for lunch. People walk in with their books and their arms and whatnot. And I just walk over and I see you love your book. I have a book. I'd like you to read it. It's yours. And if you like it or don't like it, please give me a holler. I put my phone number in the cover. And I cannot tell you how many people have called me back. I'm no youngster. And I tell my grandsons who just graduated college that you're never too old to dream and let your imagination fly.
Couldn't agree more, Harriet. Thank you. Frances J. Hill taught math, science, and language. She was also a math and basketball coach in Evergreen, Alabama. She started writing poetry when she was a child. And once she retired in 2019, she finally had the time to compile My Poetry Book. Poems about trust, challenges, family, traditions, travel. You cover a lifetime, don't you, Frances?
Yes, yes. All those things. Just things I encountered throughout my lifetime, yes. What inspired me was my granddaughter, because I always had written poetry, and she was taking some classes in junior college, and she had to write a poem. And so she said, Nana, would you help me write my poem? I did, and she made an A. She called me later with excitement, and she said, Nana, why don't you try writing your own poem and have it published? Because your students have to write one for you every year, and you had that poem published. So I said, you know, she's right. So that's how I began. I just needed that push because I always wanted to be a writer.
Do you have a short one you could read for me?
Yes, I can. I can read you one.
Courage. It comes from within. It gives you the ability to face pain and sorrow, helps you to tackle danger. Courage persuades you to venture out. Courage is bold, strong, and fearlessly. Daring, powerful, and gutless. It makes you strong and mighty. Most of all, it provides you with the strength to endure challenges.
Nice.
Courage. Yes, ma'am.
Courage. We all need a little bit of that.
We do. And my granddaughter encouraged me and gave me the courage to write my book.
How many poems in your book?
That's a total of 50. Total of 50 poems, yes.
Do they have any open mic nights or, you know, is there anywhere where you can go and read your poetry there in Montgomery?
I really have not looked into that, but I had a friend actually ask me about that and that he was going to try to get me somewhere. But I have not really did that yet.
There are states, I know in New Jersey, they have competitions, they have poetry gatherings where poets get together and read, and it's nice.
Actually, my church in Montgomery, First Baptist, allowed me to have a book signing there, and it went great in April. And I also did a book signing at my hometown. They have a thing they call the Collard Green Festival.
That's great.
I did it there too, yes. It's kind of like a carnival. But it was awesome. So yes, I have done that.
Were you able to sell some books?
I sold every book that I had. I did. It was awesome. I was so surprised and happy and joyful. It went better than I thought it would.
You going to do more of that?
Yes, I'm planning on another one at the library in Evergreen soon. I have a short video also on YouTube for viewing for those people that would like to view that short video. And my books are also on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Books A Million.
Great. That's great, Frances. Are you going to keep writing?
Yes, I am. I'm almost completed my second book.
And I have been working on a novel, which hopefully I can complete that in the next couple of years or less.
All right, Frances, thanks. Artuan Jones wrote Courage the Turtle, but he's paying his debt to society at the moment. So Nathaniel Jones is stepping in to tell us what courage is all about.
He said it's inspired him from when he was a child, the things he had, you know, he endured through his childhood that inspired him to write Courage the Turtle. Basically, it's about, you know, never say nobody what you can't do.
So I'm reading his introduction, you know, and it says, mistreated his whole life, Courage wanted nothing more than to be accepted by his older brother, Speedy the Turtle, and all the animals in Forest Bay.
Because he's in the forest on the book when it first, you know, when it first starts out. He's trying to get accepted by, you know, the other kids, and they're laughing at him and stuff because he doesn't have a shell. And basically, you know, they're laughing at him because he doesn't have a shell. He's different than other kids.
Why doesn't he have a shell?
Well, he was born different, and all the other forest creatures laughed at him, and they picked at him because he didn't have a shell. He was different, and he basically fought his way back home. Yeah, he's sad, and basically, after the kids pick at him, you know, he accepts it, but at the same time, he's not accepting it. But then he has a situation where he's dealing with the different kids in the forest, you know, and he's trying to fit in. And he's talking to his mother and his other family members and all that. But he's trying to make himself fit in. But at the same time, he shows that he has compassion as well, because then he has a fairy god turtle. And after all he had went through with them, fairy god turtle comes in and then grants him three wishes. You know, after he rescues one of his friends from the forest, after there's a fire in the woods, but instead of him wishing for his shell, he wishes for things for other people, other friends in the forest.
What a nice guy.
Mm-hmm. We also have another book coming out soon. You know, we're in the process of finishing that up, and we're going to send that into Page Publishing as well.
All right, Nathaniel, we'll be looking for that. Thank you so much. And that's all she wrote for this edition of the Page Publishing Book Club. All of our shows are available as podcasts at 710WOR.com. So if you missed anything, that's where you got to go. If you've got a book idea, come on, write it down. Send it in. You never know what could happen. You might end up being a guest on the Page Publishing Book Club. Anything's possible. Thanks to our authors and to the Night Owls who join us every week. I don't know how you do it, but we're glad you do. We'll catch you next time, same time, same place. I'm Alice Stockton Rossini.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.